My name's Willard Machen, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to say here, if I hadn't been an alcoholic, there's a good chance I wouldn't have been nothing. And, that's pretty deep. It's got, but I get it. It's by the grace of God and a lot of people like you, a lot of people like in this room, and a lot of people helping me, and I've been sober since the 13th day of September, 1965, one day at a time, and I'm really grateful for that. I'm more grateful every year. And up until now, I've had a lot of fun. I enjoyed this afternoon talking, probably more than I do this thing we have to do here tonight, and up until we just sat over there talking and Gibbonson, I'm thinking, we're fixing to hear some guy get up here and talk, and we're going to talk about him, and then look up, and it's me we're going to have to talk about. But this has been real comfortable for me to be here, and I wanted to take back a memento of the 32nd Tri-State Coon Supper. They're not going to believe this, and... And Harlan said they're really going to have some coon over there. Now, there they have. There'll be some fried chicken, but there'll be some coon there, too, if you really want it. So we have some strange customs in Texas. We had goat one year at a deal, and but I'm really glad to be here. I'm sure it's through Harlan's effort to spread my name around that got me invited to come over here, and I appreciate it. I like being with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where I need to be. And ever since I came here, this is where I wanted to be. And I realize that's been a gift in my life. That ever since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been wanting to be at Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been wanting to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's closer to the truth, and I'd like to realize that if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I probably wouldn't have been nothing. I wouldn't have been anything. This is what I am. I was never anything until I was this. I didn't give up anything to come here. I didn't have a lot of stuff and lost it and tried to regain it. I just had nothing. And I was just sick and scared as far back as I can remember. I don't remember being real scared and don't remember having a knot in my stomach until I was in the first grade. And it dawned on me one night I probably had 5 or 6 pretty good years. But I tell you what, the first time they took me down to the edge of the schoolhouse in Hart, Texas, and sent me over to go to school, I'm scared. And I'm scared, and I'm different, and I don't understand. And I believe that's what alcoholism is to me, that I'm scared, and I don't understand things that other people understand. And I don't know what classroom to go in, and I don't know what the signal is to come in at recess. And I don't know where we get out at noon, and I don't know where to go for lunch. And my daddy's going to pick me up, and I don't know where he's going to pick me up at. And I'm always standing out here crying, wondering what we're going to do. And I had to live like that from about 10 years I lived like that till I was 16. And then we went with some guys one night and bought us some Lone Star beer. That's a Texas product. Don't say ooh, now come on, it'll get you. And I drank some Lone Star beer, and I was different. And the difference was I wasn't different anymore. I remember we bought some Lone Star beer and some Viceroy cigarettes, and my life was never the same after that. That was a great turning point in my life. And every once in a while, I go to Brownfield, Texas, and I drive over across the tracks over there, and I see that place we bought that beer, and I remember that. But for the grace of God, I'd probably died by now, but that's where it all started. So that's kind of what alcohol did for me. I was listening. I had to go hear Robert talk last night. And normally you get to go places, but I had to go over there. They took me over there, and I listened real close to how these people are going to talk, because in our part of the country, it seemed like in a typical meeting, these people say, "Well, I'm going to talk about what it used to be like," and what happens, what it's like now, and then they say, "Oh, it was hell." And I usually show them the book after that's over, and it says what we used to be like. And what happened, if I talk about what it used to be like, I'm kind of divorced myself from that. And it was bad. And it, whatever it is still out there. But I'll tell you a little bit tonight about what I used to be like and what happened and what I think I'm like now and what's happened in my life. As I said, I started off like that, scared, and I drank when I was when I was 16, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 24 years old. And I didn't mean to. I got a lot of congratulations for coming here that young. And this was back 23 years ago when there wasn't very many young people here. And I know it was kind of an oddity, but people said, oh, I think it's wonderful that you young people can get here and don't have to go through all that stuff we went through. And I should have been here 2 years earlier. I had all these things wrong with my life. And so it's no great shakes to get here when you're young. And if you're young and they tell you that, smile and go on and don't you believe it, that it's great that you got here because you didn't do nothing with it. I would have stayed till I was 96 out there if I could have, but I couldn't. I drank as long as everybody else did. I drank as long as I could. And trying to live with what was going on inside of me, I had to have some relief. And so I started off sick, and then I found me some medicine, which was this Lone Star beer and everything else. And then when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing they do is take away my medicine. Say, you can't drink anymore. And anybody tells you just keep coming back, it's going to be all right, you better watch them, because in about 3 months, you're going to go stark raving sober. You'll be... See, that's what happened to me when I got here and stopped drinking. Is that what was solving my problem and what was keeping my mind under control as best I could was taken away from me, and I was still crazy. See, and I knew, one of the first things my sponsor loaned me his big book when I first got here. And I read in here, it says, the main problem of the alcoholic is in the mind rather than the body. And I can remember back when I was a kid that my mind used to start running, and it reminds me of an old engine of some sort with a clutch, and if you just kind of let up on it a little bit, it would just spin away. It would run away. I thought more than once that my mind would run off from me if I kept thinking about something. Sometimes I still get that. Not often, but my problem is still in my mind. But I didn't know that, and I didn't know that when I was 13 and 14, and I was scared to death. I would get so scared at night I couldn't sleep. I would think about things that bothered me so much, it would scare me so much I couldn't even sleep. One night I slept outside in the back of a pickup, and I looked up at the stars, and I contemplated the infinity and the Trinity and all this other thing, and I damn near lost it. It almost spun away on me there, and I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep for a long time. I didn't sleep good after that. One night I got to wondering about where people go when they die. And I got to wonder about where my mother and daddy are going to go when they die. And I thought about that, and I couldn't sleep, and I didn't have no booze. I didn't know to drink. And that's the life I lived up till I found alcohol, till I found this solution to this. And when I drank that Lone Star beer, I wasn't worried about contemplating infinity anymore. And none of that stuff bothered me. And all the stuff I'd heard in my upbringing in these churches didn't bother me anymore, didn't scare me anymore. And so that's what I found in booze. And I hung on like that till I was about 24, and I don't know how I stayed that long. So it's not through my good graces that I got here young. And it's through grace of the good graces of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that took me and helped me when I got here that I've been able to be sober ever since I've been here. And the very first night that I called Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm one of the guys that calls way up in the morning. And one of the night callers, y'all may have been that. I think on our little answering service we have, I always take the shift from midnight to 6. Because that's kind of when my folks are running around out there. I mean, the real... See, because I don't know why you'd want to come to AA before midnight when the boss... Because if you get that booze, you wouldn't be scared. You wouldn't need any help. And I don't know why you'd want to come after 6 in the morning because the sun's up and you can see stuff and that them things are not going to get you and those boogers are not out there and ain't nobody going to bother you. But at that time in there from about 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning when they are out there and they're going to get you. And that's when I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that happened to me over the telephone was I got the message of Alcoholics Anonymous from this old man in Odessa, Texas. And he knew what was the matter with me. And I knew that he knew what was the matter with me. And that's the greatest revelation I ever had, that somebody else understood what was the matter with me. And I talked to him probably an hour there, and he let me talk. And I told him some things that were going on in my life, and he said, "Hell, that's just kid stuff. That's just a bunch of kid stuff you're doing." He said, "There's a whole bunch more of that out there if you want it." And then he gave me the message, which is the only message of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think. He said, "But you don't ever have to take another drink the rest of your life if you don't want to." So I came here knowing I never did have to drink anymore. I've believed ever since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I never did have to drink. Because somebody told me you don't have to drink anymore. He didn't say, "If you drink, it'll be all right, just keep coming back." He said, "Don't drink. What we're going to do is not drink." He said, "How long can you go without drinking?" And I said, "Well, I can go 2 or 3 days sometimes without drinking. Not that bad." And he said, "Kid, you got this program made because you don't ever have to go 2 or 3 days without drinking. What we're going to do is we're not going to drink one bottle of beer one day. Can you do that?" And I said, "I believe I can." And I think part of that's where I picked up giving these dry dates, giving this sobriety date. So what we did on September the 14th, I got up and I tried not to drink one bottle of beer all day long. See? And this book says, when you're working with these newcomers, stress the spiritual feature freely. And after he took me to my first meeting, he said, "Now, tomorrow we're going to start this little game, as it is, where you're going to not try to drink all day." And he said, "What you do is when you get up in the morning, you get on your knees beside the bed and you ask God to help you stay sober." And he said, "Then you go all day long without drinking, and then you get out on your knees that night and you say thanks for being sober." So we started talking about praying the first night he took me to my meeting. We started talking about God first time he took me to a meeting. I tell Harlan, somebody up here today, you know, the people that I heard him say too, if they'd talked to me about God when I came here, I wouldn't have stayed. And where would you go? Where the hell would you? I already been out there, and that wasn't any good. And I didn't come in here because I like the coffee and the cigarette smoke and all the donuts and stuff. Anyway, I came. I came in here because I couldn't stand it out there. And I know what was in here. It didn't make any difference what was in here when I came. So I got out next morning. I had a good situation at home to sober up in, because we had a boy about 3 years old. And there was three of us, and we had a three-bedroom house, and everybody had their own bedroom. And so if I wanted to get out beside my bed and pray, nobody's going to see me, because I'm back there by myself. And the kid had a room, and the wife had a room, and me and the dog had the back room back there. And so I wasn't embarrassed. I was not embarrassed the next morning to get out on my knees and say, "God, don't let me take a drink today." And then I went all day long, and I didn't drink, and I got home at night, and I said, "Thank you for keeping me sober." And with very few changes, that's the kind of prayer I still pray every morning when I get up. I forget some days. I really, some days I forget. I'd hate to say I'm perfect and said that prayer. I hadn't done that every day. But when I say my morning meditation, I say, "God help me not take a drink today. And show me what you want me to do with my life. And give me strength to do it." And then I take what comes along that day. But, see, I came here under a lot of misconceptions like a lot of people did. I thought that drinking was my problem. I thought I had this bad drinking problem. And I was going to solve this problem even before I came here by just stopping drinking. And I really became an alcoholic and got in trouble when I started stopping drinking and found out I couldn't. And I'm 24 years old and I can't stop. And so I quit stopping forever and I started stopping for a week. And I couldn't stop for a week. I just could not stop drinking. And the reason I couldn't stop drinking is I would stop and buy some beer. And it's hard to stop drinking, stopping and buying some beer, you know. Okay, it's hard to do. I didn't catch on to that. This stuff they told me in AA was so simple I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of it already. That we're not going to drink one bottle of beer one day at a time, and you can't get drunk if you don't take the first drink. And I thought, God, I understand that. I understand that. And I kind of started doing that. So when I first come in, I got took under the wing of an old-timer who had been around here for a while, and he explained to me some of the mechanics of Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me I had to go to a lot of meetings, so I started going to meetings. I think it's real important, if you're a new person here, to find you a sponsor. Once you're here long enough to know what a sponsor is and what a sponsor is supposed to do. Because, see, I believe sponsorship saved my life. I know sponsorship saved my life. Because all this stuff I had in me and been carrying with me, I had to find me this one person who I could go and tell this stuff to. And I had to find this person who understood me. And they told me when I was looking for a sponsor to look around and find somebody who's sober like I wanted to be sober when I was here that long. And so I picked my sponsor like that. And this old man helped me. And I've always had one sponsor. I still have one sponsor. We ain't speaking much now, but I still got one sponsor. Because I always got that last guy I go see just before I run away. See? And I'm afraid if everybody in this group was my sponsor or everybody in AA was my sponsor, I'd go around and find me a guy who would tell me just exactly what I want to hear. And this guy didn't tell me what I want to hear. When I came in, I said something today about this chapter, the doctor's opinion in this book. And my sponsor made me read that in here to find out about what alcoholism was. And he explained to me the nature of this illness that I have. And, you know, I knew that once I started drinking, I was going to get drunk. The part about being allergic to alcohol, I understood. I understood I had an allergy. Sometimes, just before I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember I stopped over in Monahans, Texas one time. I got sober in Odessa, and it's about 40 miles over there. And I stopped and I drank two glasses of beer, and I got in the car and I drove to Odessa, and I could feel something happening to me. And I never really stopped drinking that long after I started to let this thing happen. And I knew I was changing up in here. Something's happening to me when I drank beer. I got an allergic reaction. And when I leave this bar over here after two bottles of beer, I'm thinking I'm going home and get the wife and kid and we're going out to eat supper or whatever we're going to do. And when I get to Odessa, I'm thinking, I don't know why anybody want to go home. I can't imagine going home. Because they got a pool hall over there, not a block from where I work, and they got domino tables, and those guys are over there. Left to my own devices, I would probably be a moon player. These are my kind of people hang out over at the moon parlor. They shoot the moon and play 42 and got that old bar rag, and that's the kind of stuff I love, see? Did. I don't anymore. But that's where I'd go. And I changed so quick. My thinking would change 180 degrees. And that was an allergy to alcohol. I understood that. I know once I start drinking, I'm going to drink some more. But what it took me a long time to figure out and what I had to get drilled into my head was the other part of this disease that we have is this obsession to drink alcohol. What is it in me that makes me want to go back to this again and again and again? And to me, that's a critical part of the illness. Indeed, this book even says that the fact that we're allergic to alcohol is of no consequence, would be of no consequence if we didn't reach out and take that first drink. So my allergy is not my problem. My obsession is. I'm allergic to some other stuff. I think I'm allergic to some other things. Now, I remember very distinctly in 1962, I stopped at my uncle's house one day, and I ate lunch with him and my old aunt, and she had some boiled turnips over there, and I ate some boiled turnips. And I may be allergic to boiled turnips. Because I mean, I was up all night with some kind of an allergy. Like an aerosol can with a hole in both ends. And I think I'm allergic to boiled turnips. But I tell you what, I don't have an obsession. I've never eaten another boiled turnip in my life. Never. I've never given that a thought. Maybe if we fried them, I could eat these turnips. No, I ain't going to eat no turnip. I ain't going to do that. No. If I went to another state and ate turnips, I'd feel, but no, I never eat that again. I guess I'm allergic, but I don't have an obsession. And then once when I lived in Arizona, we lived on the border, right by Sonora, old Mexico, and we could get some real chorizo down there, and I may be allergic to real chorizo, but I ain't never eat any more chorizo, and I got no obsession to eat any more chorizo either, see. But there's something different about alcohol. I got the same allergic reaction to that, but I don't have this quirk in my mind up here. So to me, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is not about my drinking. It's not about my drinking. It's about this mental obsession that I had, and what am I going to do about that? And that's what this program's about. And that's why, in a lot of respects, it's kind of an intangible kind of program, I think. All of you, I'm sure, have been on 12-step calls, and sometimes it's kind of a helpless feeling to know this guy needs something right here. And I got this AA program. It's kind of, here. And I think that's why we developed orange juice and honey. And I think you could do Coca-Cola and, cornflakes. And you do something every 30 minutes, you know. Don't drink no whiskey. Don't drink whiskey. And drink a little of this and eat a little of this every half hour, and I'll come by and see you in the morning. If they do that, they'll be all right. And I think orange juice and honey is just a filler. It's a program. It's tangible. It's something. See, I believe that. But I had a guy the other night tell me he'd been sober about a year, come back and said, "You remember when we stopped and you bought that orange juice and honey? I have to go buy it for him." And he said, "I hadn't had a drink since." And I think, well, maybe that works. But see, you drink this big old glass of orange juice and take a little honey every 30 minutes, he didn't have room to drink anything else. He couldn't get it in. But, so this program's about this obsession that I have. What am I going to do about my mind? What am I going to do about my mind? See? Because I had a mind in here, like in this book talks about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, I would change once I started drinking. And when I came here, I found somebody else who understood what was the matter with my mind. I was reading a book one day, and I found an AA quote in there, and I put it in the back of my book here. And it says, "When you live in the shadow of insanity, the appearance of another mind that thinks and talks as yours does is something close to a blessed event, like Robinson Crusoe's discovery of footprints in the sand." And to me, that's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. This was a blessed event. I'm not the only one on this island anymore. Somebody else is here. And I think that's why I've always wanted to keep coming back around here, because there's always been somebody here who had something that I wanted. And this same guy said that the solutions to these problems are simple after you have arrived at them. But they're simple only when you know what they already are. The solution to my problem was simple once I already found out what it was. So I came here, and that's how I kind of got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't want to stay back there much longer. I want to tell you that's kind of what happened to me. What happened to me was I got active in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started going to, as I said this afternoon, to a lot of service meetings. I started going to a lot of meetings. My sponsor compared everything that I was doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of like, for example, I would say I couldn't come to my meeting on Thursday because we had some people over for Thanksgiving supper that night. And he said, "Did them people ever keep you sober?" I said, "Well, no, they didn't." Or if I said, "Well, I can't come because my uncle's coming into town," he said, "Did your uncle ever keep you sober?" I said, "Well, no, he didn't." And so I never had any excuse for not going. And this old man told me a lot of places we was going to go. You know, "I'll be by, and we're going to go over there and do this." And I said, okay. So somebody took me. Somebody took me and loved me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was important to me. And this was an old man sober about 15 years, and he got sober in 1950, and he's since passed away in 1980 or so. But this old man loved me, and I hear about bad sponsors and hard sponsors and sponsors that curse and denounce, and somebody said, find a sponsor who you hate and go to him because he probably got just the answer you need, and you're probably, that's garbage. See, my sponsor loved me. See, this old man loved me, and he loved me so much I knew he loved me. See, and sometimes he'd curse me. He'd say, "Oh, why don't you go drink a little bit? Yeah, why don't you do that?" And I said, I wanted some sympathy. And he said, "Oh, poor, but why don't you just drink a little bit?" And I said, "You know, I can't drink." He said, "Well, why don't you sit down and we'll talk about this a little bit and see." And so I spent a lot of time with my sponsor. And he told me one day, he said, "You know, ain't it great when we get together?" I'd go see him every morning. We'd drink a cup of coffee. And he said, "Ain't it great when we get together here that we don't have to talk about what the weather was or the Super Bowl or whatever's going on here, Monday Night Football. Just start talking about AA." And that's what we started talking about, and that's what we talked about all the time. We talked about AA. We talked about somebody. We talked about the people in AA. But most of them we loved. You see old so-and-so at the meeting. Ain't he doing good? Or old so-and-so, ain't he doing bad? I wonder what he's going to do. And but it was always about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took me, and they showed me about the fellowship, and they showed me about the benefits that I received for being active in this fellowship. And it made me get a home group, and we met every Monday and every Thursday, and I was expected to be there every Monday and every Thursday. And they said, and they didn't take me to my first meeting. When I called my sponsor at 3 o'clock in the morning, he didn't come get me. He said, "If you still feel the same way in the morning as you feel tonight, you call me back." And I've used that ploy a lot. I don't ever see him anymore. But somehow I found that old man that night, and I found him the next day. See, so all the last few years, the people I've gone and got way up in the way hours of the morning, they don't ever go to any meetings. They don't ever come back. They don't ever want to see this. They don't want to meet me the next morning. They don't want to do that. About 2 weeks ago, I told one to come meet me at 7 o'clock the next morning. We'd come down there, and he don't show up. But I went, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what I get by going out and getting the sick ones. That's that time of the morning when they're just kind of scared. But I'm glad somebody took me and showed me about that and introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous and showed me what the fellowship was about. I stayed sober about 2.5 years in Odessa and Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're good AA in West Texas. I was talking back here just got an eye about Odessa. It's good AA. And I moved to Lubbock, and they didn't do it right. They did different. You know how they do AA in those other places. They don't do it right. They don't do it different. And I had a long period of transition up there when I had to fit myself back into AA. And since I've been in AA, I've moved a lot. It's been good for me. I like that. I'm glad I've got to move around a lot. But if you got sober here, someday you may have to move somewhere else. You might as well get ready to accept the fact that they do it different. They don't do it right. They don't read this part out of the book like we do, and they don't have the meeting like we do, and they don't start on time. I moved to Arizona, and the first meeting I went to was 8 o'clock. About 10 after, we're sitting there, and one guy told me, he said, "Well, we'll start at 12. He said, "They start on Mexican time out here." So just, you know. I didn't know what that was. It's about 8:15. It was that 8 o'clock meeting. And by the time I got used to that, I moved up into the mountains, Arizona, between the Navajo and Apache Indian Reservation. And I go to this meeting. It's about 8:20. He said, "We start on Indian time up here." And, it's just kind of show up and start, and you kind of leave when you get through. And so, but all this moving around helped me to be a little more flexible in seeing AA across the spectrum about what it is. After I got sober, I went back to school. I went to college. And I like to mention that because, there's a lot of people who got deprived of education by being drunk. And when you get sober, you can go back. And you can go to school on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can get those degrees on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can get a degree one day at a time, you know. And I started at a community college, and I barely got out of high school. And after I'd been sober about 2.5 years or so, I was 28, 29 years old, 28 years old, I guess. I started a community college, and then we moved to Lubbock, so I'd go to university. And my sponsor said he thought I'd been incarcerated into the university because I'd like to never got out of that place. I stayed and stayed and stayed, but I got a couple degrees, so you can get some degrees after you're sober. And my wife and I had an agreement that Alcoholics Anonymous and this way of life would always be first, and our family will always be first. And we can go to school as long as it don't interfere with everything else. And we knew it was going to be broke for a while, and she knew she was going to work for a while, and we knew it would be a struggle for a while. But if the school ever gets more important than sobriety, then we're going to rent us a truck, and we're going to leave. And we're not even going to go out and get our books. And we talked about that before we went up there. So I did that. A day at a time, I went to school. I didn't make very good grades, but I got out. When you get a degree, nobody knows what kind of grades you made. Nobody cares. I teach at a college now, and these old kids want to know what the difference between about a 2.9 grade point average and a 3.1. None. Nobody cares what kind of GPA you got. They want to know, do you have this degree? And you say, yes, I got it. That's been my experience. I don't have the best grades in college, but I didn't have the worst grades. And I kept my AA first and went to my meetings and tried to make all the 12-step calls and help all the people I could. And I did the school on the side, and I got some degrees. Three. I got three now. I was going to tell them. See. Harlan said I was educated way beyond my intelligence. But I mean that to be a good example. And when you leave here, you're going to say, if that damn guy can do that, surely I will be a genius when I go back to school. And you can do that. So I encourage you to go. Whatever you want to be, Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help you be that if you've got the capacity to be it. You know, it ain't going to make you something you're not. But it changed my whole life. It changed my whole profession. It changed everything about it. I was a salesman in the oil field, and I'm a college professor. See? I didn't know I was going to be a college professor. this was revealed to me through the program and through as this unfolded. I don't know what's going to happen in my life. I don't know where my life was going. But when I was going to school, I said, God, help me not take a drink. Show me what you want to do in my life and give me strength to do it and get up and go to school every day. And I prayed about tests, and he let me flunk some of those tests, too. See, God don't care much about finals and that kind of stuff. He ain't interested. He ain't interested in that. We always got 12-step calls on a day. I was going to go somewhere and hibernate and study for this one last final. And I'd get a 12-step call. I'd think, God, I don't want to go see this old boy. I'm thinking that as I'm going over to see this old boy. See? And I think, why don't I get somebody else to go see this guy? I've got to go study. I've got to go do something else. I spent more time sitting in hospitals and going to see drunks and doing this kind of stuff when I'd been studying for finals. And I'd just say, God, help me do best I can on this final. I'd go out and make my C and go on. See, it made no difference. It made no difference. I didn't drink nothing, and nobody knew that I made a C on some of those finals out here. So A was different in these towns. And, you know, I finally got to a place where I went to, I lived in Yuma for a while, and I went to the mountains in Sholo for a while. If you've never been to Sholo, if you've been there, you know where it is. If you ain't, it only me trying to tell you, because it's right down the road from Snowflake. A little bit from, it's 20 miles from Snowflake, and if you've been out there, well, and it's, and they're different. They're just about the differentest bunch of people you've ever seen out there. And I went to a group that met once a week, and there was three of us showed up out there. And if you drove 20 miles, you could go to another meeting, and you drive 50 miles, you could go to another one. So you could go to three meetings a week if you had a little time in a car to go. But I learned more. I learned a lot going to that little group. I learned that I can stay sober wherever I go. And I learned that sobriety's got to be in here. Sobriety's in here. Sobriety's between me and God as I understand him in this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I take this with me wherever I go. And I take these books with me wherever I go. No matter where I am, I just load up my books and go. I bet I got 25 books. I bet you I got 25 books. I don't know what I do with them. I know everybody's got books. But I got some old books and I got some new books. And sometimes the books are on sale. I just buy two or three and take them home, you know. And I may need them sometime. And today we were talking about some old books, and I got a couple of second edition books, which this one is. One time I ordered them from the General Service Office, and they came wrapped up in brown paper, and I threw them in a closet, and I found them the other day. They're still up there, I threw them in a closet. I had them for 15 years. And I bought them when I didn't have $10 to buy them with. But I don't know, someday I found a $10 bill. I want some books. I want some more of this. I want some more of this. Whatever this is, I want some more of it. Before we came to the meeting, I went over here to the archives and looked around that, and that made my evening. I'd rather go do that than I hadn't come do this. Let's go look at this old stuff, see where we come from. Because I think it's real important, as has been said a lot of times this weekend, we got to know where we come from. We got to know what this is about. Because if we don't understand it, how are we going to tell everybody else about it? The meetings I go to now, I go to study meetings. That's about the only kind of meetings I go to. I go to a few discussion meetings, but not many. In Texas, especially in Amarillo, we have a lot of clubs. Everybody goes to clubs. We got a lot of club meetings. And we got a lot of club problems. And we got, I know we all don't have these here, but we got the gin players and the domino players and the club board running the group. And we got one at the group's the same name of the club, and nobody knows what you're paying dues for or what's going on or who can come to meetings. And I just went off and found me a couple of churches, and that's where we meet. And I think that's been a good influence in our town. And what we do, we study the big book, we read it and talk about it, we discuss it, and then we do the 12 and 12, and then we read it and discuss it and talk about it. And we discuss a lot. We don't just read. In the middle of a paragraph, we break in, we talk about it, we talk about it, we talk about it. And we do that over and over and over. And that's how you build a group. Somebody today talked about how do you have a stronger AA group. I think that's how it is. I think you get back focused on the literature and focused on the program of recovery. People from the podium don't put this thing out as hard as it's put out in this book. They don't soft pedal it very much in this book. They say, here's what you got to do, and here's what's going to happen if you don't do it, and here will be the benefits if you do do it. And you can just read this stuff in black and white, and nobody has to agree with it, but that's what works. Here's what works. But remember that we deal with alcohol. You know, what is our primary purpose? See? The other night in our group, some guy brought a dictionary. He bought one of these great big old dictionaries, one of these big old Reader's Digest dictionaries that you can't carry, and he left it. And we got into this debate about said, well, I've been sober ever since I've been here. And they said, well, no, but I've been dry some days. I ain't been sober, but I've been dry. And we don't know if we've been dry or we've been sober and all that. And so I looked up sober in this great big dictionary. And the first thing it said was, not drunk. I swear to God, that's what it said. And I said, I've been sober 23 years, never how many days it is. I've been sober ever since I've been here. I think that sounds good. I think that has a ring to it. I have been sober. See? And if you really want to start it over at our place, one guy says recovering, and the other guy says recovered, and here we go again. And sometimes when it's dull, I just will say I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I say, well, how can you be recovered? And so we go about on that. And I say, I didn't make this in this book. Read this book. What does it say in this book? See? What does it say? I bought this book somewhere else, you know. But but a lot of times when I lived in some of these little towns, we didn't spend a lot of time in these books. You know, we spent a lot of time arguing and talking about a lot of other stuff. But I had to stay sober through that. And, you know, probably one of the greatest things that happened to me was, you know, when I had to move back to Amarillo, I took a job coming back to Amarillo. I wanted to mention here, too, I forget this stuff I want to say. Somebody asked this afternoon about, do you put your member Alcoholics Anonymous in your resume? You're getting a job. I never did put it in my resume. But I've never taken a job since I've been Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't tell them. Never. And I never applied for insurance in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't tell them. See? Y'all don't have to do that. I'm just tell you what I did. And when I went to school all these years, and I was going to interview for my first job, and I had one job interview. That's it. That's how many options I had. You know, one. And I'm in Arizona, and this guy's going to hire me, and I think, what am I going to tell him? Or do I even have to tell him? And I talked to my sponsor about it, and I put that off till the very end. I mean, this guy's taking me back to town, and he's going to hire me. And I said, well, before I leave, I better tell you something. That I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have been for these, I don't know, it's been a few years I've been in. And he said, what I find to be the typical answer. He said, you know, my wife's got a brother-in-law, and goes to AA. And I said, you know, that's... And he said, now you be sure and be out here about August, and we just start, and I want to say, just a minute, could we stop and talk a little bit more about my recovery from this disease and how great it is that I go to AA, and they don't much care. That's been my experience. Now, I know sometimes people get fired for going to AA, but if you get fired for going to AA, that ain't the job you're supposed to have. And if you don't get insurance because you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you ain't supposed to have that insurance. You don't need their insurance. If you're sober, you can get by without insurance. You can work and make some money. I don't know, something will happen in your life. You don't need any insurance. I believe that. So I put it down. I tell them everywhere I go, and it's always been beneficial. When I left the one place in Arizona, I went up into the mountains, I told this other guy. I always tell my immediate supervisor. I'm a member of AA. I go to AA, and I'm going to continue to go to AA. When I get to your town, if it makes any difference, then you need to tell me now. I said, that's a no consequence. My brother went one now. I talked to Dean the other day. His brother's in AA now. And so I've always done that. The last guy I told when I came to Amarillo, I came and interviewed, and I told one guy. And then I get home, I get a phone call from the Dean, the big Dean. And he wants to know if I want to come back. And I said, well, before I drive back out there, I need to tell you, I remember I told him on the phone. And he said, it didn't make any difference to him. And then when I got out here, they said, you don't work for this guy anymore. You work for this other Dean. And as I said before, I'd already unloaded my U-Haul truck. Now, that's faith. I had to go. So I went and told that guy, too. And they don't care. See, they don't care. And so I'm comfortable now. Then it's not necessary that I hide from anybody. It's not necessary that I fear anybody's going to find out about it. Because I'm a teacher. I teach at a community college. Somebody's in my office every day. There's an AA comes to my office almost every day. Almost every day, somebody comes by. There's a lot of students going back. They're taking classes at the local community college. They come by my office, and they see me, and I see them. And I feel better for seeing them, and I think they feel better for seeing somebody out here who's in AA and not hid over here behind a rock somewhere. I need to be anonymous at the level of the press, radio, and film. I don't need to be anonymous where I work. If you come through Amarillo, you look under Willard. I ain't in the book. You won't find me. No. You got to look under Machen, M-A-C-H-E-N. You got to come in there and find me, and then I'll be there. One little town I lived in was so small, we went down and told the sheriff we was in AA. And we got a lot of calls because there wasn't but two of us, and they, you know, we didn't even have street addresses. And Sholo don't have street addresses. Somebody nodded when I said Sholo. Somebody's been to Sholo. You just go up there and turn by the Reedhead's house, and that's kind of where I live. You know? You do. And you live in old Jordan place, you know, and that's kind of where you lived. And so if anybody's going to find you, I said, we went down and told the sheriff, here's my name and phone number. That ain't anonymous. That ain't the level of the press, radio, and the film. Now, the other day, I went over and spoke to the Rotary Club and told them a little bit about AA, and a guy come up after it's over and said, I didn't catch your last name. And I said, it's Machen. And I said, why you want to know? He said, well, I'm writing this up for the Canyon Independent newspaper. And I said, no, you're not. You can't do that. Don't use my name in that newspaper. See? Don't use my name in a newspaper. But I just wanted to say that my sponsor told me, he said, nothing bad is ever going to happen to you for being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing bad is ever going to happen to you for being an AA. And I remember that. I've gone on some of the scariest damn 12-step calls, and I'm thinking, this old man said ain't nothing going to happen to me when I go to this old... when I go down here to this place in this old hotel, and I don't know what it is around Little Rock, but in Lubbock it's called the Little Hotel. Ooh, and in Amarillo it's the Ross Hotel. And everybody's got these old hotels, and you go down there, and boy, and I say, well, this old man told me, and nothing bad ever happened to me for going down to a little hotel and trying to help another alcoholic. So far, nothing's ever happened to me. And ain't nothing bad going to happen to me for telling people I'm an alcoholic. So, I tried to think of a couple other things I wanted to put in before I'm finished. I'm about towards the end. One guy told me to start about right here before the meeting. I don't know where he told me to start, kind of towards the end of my talk, but I'm getting kind of towards the end of it here. When I want to take a few minutes and talk about some experiences I had when I got back being delegate. And as I said this afternoon, every delegate I know that's been to New York has had different experiences. And I'd never been to New York. I'd been as far east as New Orleans once. I was pretty scared there. I didn't know what they did in New York. I thought I knew. You get off an airplane and you're probably going to get mugged. And I didn't get mugged. They just took my billfold. That wasn't too bad. But when I went to New York the first year, I was scared all the way up there. And I got off of that plane and we got on that cab at LaGuardia Airport. And we're driving down the Henry Hudson Parkway going to the hotel. And I tell you what, something happened to me, and I don't hear many other delegates that this ever happened to, but I loved it. I love New York City. I do till today. I like being there. I like being out on the street. And those people up there, all those New Yorkers, they're very much like people. They're very much like humans. You know? An old professor I had one time, he said, in a lot of ways, those students out there are very much like people. And they got some real human-like traits. And the people in New York have some really human-like characteristics. A lot of time going around and trying to see it. And when I went back next year, my wife and I talked about this. I want to go back for an extended period of time. I'd like to go back there and stay there a while. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And she had a job with a phone company, which she'd had for about 18 years. I had a job where I worked 11 months. I'm kind of an administrative paper shuffler out here where I teach. And I had a big house and had a couple of rent houses. And I had a lot of stuff. I had accumulated a lot of stuff. And but a guy told me, about one of the guys out of New York told me, he said, even the old Buddha said that the more you got, the more you got to worry about. And I thought about that a lot. I had a lot of stuff I had to worry about. I had a big old dog out in my backyard to help me look after this stuff that I was worried about, you know, that I had. And I couldn't go off to New York and leave all that. And so I set about to make plans to go back and stay in New York, live in New York for a summer. And I ended up selling my house. But I want that house anyway. I couldn't leave if I had a house. When I heard Robert talk last night, it said something about always wanting something different, always wanting something else. And that's where I've always wanted. He said he always wanted more. That's what it was. Where I always wanted to live was somewhere else. That's where I'd like to live now, somewhere else. That's really where I want to go to, somewhere else. And when I was in Arizona, I wanted to live somewhere else. And now I'm here, I always want to live somewhere else. And when you got a house, you can't live somewhere else. But somebody got to come over and feed the dog that's looking after your house, that's a garden that has a computer and has all this stuff in it, and you got all these things, and I sold my house. The bottom line was I sold my house and went to New York and stayed 3 months. Loved it. I loved it. Lived in Nyack, New York. That's a New York lady. I lived right across from Tarrytown. And get up every day, and some days we'd go driving. One day we went up to East Dorset, Vermont, where Bill Wilson's buried. And we walked down the street, past the little old house where he was born, tavern. Still some drunks in the tavern, I think. But I understand some AA people bought it, and they're going to take that over. And we looked at that. We went out to the cemetery and looked around. Some days we'd take the bus into New York City, catch a subway up on 175th Street, go down. Wonderful. Loved it. I had a good time. I was there 3 months, maybe 10 weeks. First night I was there, I didn't know where I was going to live, where I was going to stay. And I was in a motel in Paramus, New Jersey, scared to death, not knowing what's going to happen to me or where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do. And I keep a little journal, and I wrote, "This is going to be all right, and I don't know how yet. God, show me what you want me to do." The next day, it all fell into place. And the last day I was there, somebody got my billfold. And I'm standing on the corner of Madison Avenue and the 43rd Street. I got no money. Nothing. And I got some money back where I live, but I live out of town. It's the scariest feeling I had since I've been in Paramus and didn't know where I was going to live. So I called the General Service Office, and I guess that's where Harlan hears all these stories. They I told me they'd have to tell everything. But it happens. I was gone 3 months, had two bad days. I don't do that good at home. I don't do that good in Amarillo. But I loved it. Went up to where the town's hospital was, looked at that, little office building kind of thing now. Went down to Calvary Church, where they used to have all the first meetings, and Sam Shoemaker's church. Spent a lot of time in archives, just sitting there reading that stuff. I just go in, that's all I do, all this, in archives, read. Look at them books. And sometimes I get up and go walk out on the street. I did, between those meetings at the General Service Conference, I just go walking. I just go out and see the people. They were good people. I liked every one of them, you know. Except the guy got my wallet. But that even worked out. Then when we left, I come back to Akron. We stopped at Akron, spent a half a day at Dr. Bob's house looking around, went down to the cemetery. We got to see all this stuff. These are the kind of experiences I've had since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I got to go back and see all this stuff. And I don't have a house now. The day before I went to New York, I had no house, living in a rent house. I sold both my cars, I got no cars, and I told my wife, I've been sober 21 years, we got no cars, no house, and she just quit her job. And she had to quit her job so we wouldn't be gone 3 months. So I said, what are we going to do? So it's faith. So we did it all on faith. We did it all on faith. Everything, it's going to be all right. It worked out good. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade anything for it now. After 17 years, she's back in school now. She's going to get a degree. She kept putting me through school, now she's going back. That's what's going to happen to my family. After I was sober 5 or 6 years, we had another baby. He's 14 years old now. Big bruiser. See? Big bruiser. Raised up in AA. Good kid. I have another kid who's a Texas Aggie. And he's been one for a long time. I did till he said suey. I didn't think about it. I thought maybe they won't know what Aggies are, but hell, never mind. We got one, and she's been there a long time, and I wear old Aggie t-shirts, and I got Aggie stickers on my car, and I got Aggie bumper plates on my car, and I don't like Aggies any better than I like anything else. I like my son. I like him. That's why I am. If he had been a Razorback, I'd have been hollering suey, you know. I don't care. But to me, that's a gift. This kid was 3 years old when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was raised up in AA. And he knew something was wrong with me when I came in. And by being in this program, he began to understand, when I come around these people, I'm going to be all right. He knew when I went to Scotty, an old man named Scotty was my sponsor, Scotty and Doty. And he knew if I went wherever Scotty and Doty was, going to be okay, and I'll be home, and I'll be all right, and I won't be whatever was the matter with me, won't be the matter with me anymore. And he didn't know how I was when I came in, but he knew it wasn't, I was, Mr. Jekyll, you know, when I came in. One time when we lived in Sholo, here, a little town about 1,000 people then, not very many people. He come on one day and said, Dad, said in our health class today we studied about alcoholism. I'm sober 8 or 10 years. He's in the 5th grade, 6th grade. I said, well, that's good. And he said, yep. And he said, we talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, that's good. And he said, I told him my daddy was the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, that's why I said, that's good. That's good. You tell him. But see, I don't want him to be afraid to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous either. He's come home from high school and asked me, he said, you know, so-and-so, her mother goes to Al-Anon. I said, how the hell do y'all talk about that? What do you talk about over when you go over to the Sonic Drive-In? You talk about whose mother goes to Al-Anon and AA and all that? How those kids would find that out? And he said, you know, her mother goes to Al-Anon and AA. And so they've always grown up to be comfortable with it. But we got to be that. We've got to be comfortable being with AA because that's what we are. We are an Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever we have is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason we even have a family is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? And my whole life is just like, it's like an upside down pyramid. And everything rests on Alcoholics Anonymous at the very tip of it. And from that springs all sorts of other things that happen to me in my life. Good job, education, a lot of material stuff, which is, I need to get rid of some more because I got too much now. I do have a rent house. I love having a rent house instead of owning a rent house. God, I like got drunk over my rent house. I took 4 steps over my rent houses. You know, I did. I would write about the plumbing. You know? Because, see, I found out when other people's plumbing stops up, it was a mechanical kind of a problem. And when mine stopped up, it was an emotional problem. In my basement, we had a sump pump that would give me emotional hangovers. See? Other people went and bought sump pumps and fixed them and called plumbers, and I didn't understand that. And I had grave emotional disorders over these sump pumps. And I'll own another house again someday. I guess it'll be all right. But right now, I got a rent house, and the other morning, I got up, and a hot water heater was busted, and I called a guy, and he come fixed it. And I said, your hot water heater's leaking in your floor over here. And I'm going to work, and you need to come fix it. I rent a house from the college I worked for right across the street. I think I really got a good life. It says on page 100 in this book that the things which happen to us when we place ourselves in God's hands are so much better than we could ever imagine. I wouldn't have picked anything this good. And it all came from coming around you people and trying to find out about this program. And it came mainly from what's in this book. Came from this program in this book. So I've got to remember, I've got to stick to this book. I'm going to stick to it. I don't know what's going to happen around Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of changes. People change. You know, society changes. The mores of society change. But, the program doesn't change. And years ago, when I was commiserating, we've commiserated about some of these problems for a long time. Two-hatters and non-alcoholics coming to meetings, pardon me, and all this other stuff. And I used to do what I read in some of Bill's writings. He talked about viewing with alarm for the good of the movement. You know, Bill said he used to do that some. He would view with alarm for the good of the movement. I used to view with alarm a lot of the trends and things that was happening around AA. Until one time I went up to see an old man about this, and he'd been sober a long time. We was talking about things going on in AA and the special groups and all these changes that are coming about. And this old man picked up a book and he stuck that book out there at me and he said, by God, they ain't going to get me. And I remember that. I don't remember much else that old man ever said to me. But sometimes I think about that, and to me, that's an analogy for what AA is. I don't know what's going to go on. I don't know about the future. I know that we're going to be here so long as God may need us to be here. That's how long it's going to be a fellowship. And if the fellowship gets too weird over here, I got these 25 books. I'm going to pick them up and go over here. And I'm going to start another meeting. And I'm going to think to myself, I'm going to look in the mirror and think that in the morning. By God, they ain't going to get me. I ain't going to go do that. And have what kind of weird format or whatever kind of weird meeting, I ain't going. I'm going to do this. And then do whatever else. And it's going to be all right. And if I keep saying this, God, show me what you want to do and give me strength to do it. It's going to be all right. That's what's going to happen. Because see, this is the greatest book I've ever read. I'm fixing to shut down here. But I read a lot of other stuff, and I read a lot of stuff that's kind of AA, has AA principles in it, but they don't know it. And I was reading a book the other day. I read a lot of strange kind of books. One, this quote I got out of this book in the back here was from a book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And it's been... And if you ain't read that, I couldn't explain to you what it meant. And I read it about every 18 months, greatest book I ever read. Because it's about a crazy guy. And it's about a guy who has a crazy guy inside of him wanting to get out. If you read that, that's him. And I love it. And I read it over and over and over. But I read another book. I was reading one day. And it's by an old philosopher named Mortimer Adler. And it's called How to Read a Book. And my wife says, what in the hell are you doing reading a book called How to Read a Book? And I got these 3 degrees, and I'm reading this book, How to Read a Book. But this guy was one of the instigators of the Great Books program back at the University of Chicago. And in the back part of this book, he talks about the characteristics of a great book. What does it take to make a great book? And I'm reading about these great books, and I'm thinking the big book, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. This guy knows this. See? And he said, one of the characteristics of a great book is that they're written by common people. For common people. They're understandable. They're readily understandable. You know? Now, Einstein wrote some books, and I've read about the theory of relativity, and I don't understand any of it. Don't understand none of that. But some of the other great books, they're readable. This is readable. It's written by common people for the common people. But the outstanding feature of this great book was that it changes as the reader changes. It evolves as you evolve. Some of the classic books, you go back and read them, they're different when you read them again. The motorcycle book is different when I go read it again, because I'm different when I read it again. This big book is different when I read it again. This is a great book. This book meets my needs wherever I am. So when I'm here a month, it satisfies and helps me get through. And when I'm here 6 months, it tells me what I need to know. When I'm here 23 years, I read it. And I got to keep going over this again and again and again. But see, my alcohol problem is over. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I ain't got any alcohol in my system. It's all out. See? So what I have is alcoholism. And I still have this problem in my mind. And whatever I did to keep me sober 23 years ain't going to be good enough next year for 24 years. I got to do some more. I got to find some more stuff. I got to grow. I got to try to grow in the spirit. And that's what I pray for. God, show me what you want me to do. And keep me this desire to want to keep coming back around you people and get some more of this. Because you can't get it all. It's like going to school. The longer you go to school, the more you know that you ain't never going to know everything they got going to school. You know? And the time you get a bachelor's degree, you're kind of frustrated because you know what you don't know. And then you get a master's and you really don't know. And if you get a doctorate, I'd just blow my brains out, I guess. Because I never would. Well, I know I never was going to do that. See? But it's all out there, and the more you study, the more there is. The more I come to AA, the more there is. And the harder I work, the more there is of it. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been good. It's been basically good. Every day I had ain't just been a bunch of laughs. And some mornings I get up and pray, God, show me what you want me to do. Give me strength to do it. And there's been some tragedies in my life. One morning I said that, and my mother died. And that's okay, and we got through that. And one morning I said that, and my sponsor died. And one morning I said that, and I'd lost my job. Another morning I said that and my other kid was born. Another day and all these things happen. And I think it's just called life. That stuff kind of happens. Kind of like the little bumper sticker, you know, it said shit happens. And I got to come down here to learn that. My kid is at A&M's known that for 10 years. He'd come home in high school and he'd say, well, Dad, he'd have some kind of catastrophe. And he'd say, well, like Roy Rogers said to Dale Evans there that time, shit like that's going to happen. You know? And he'd say that and go on. And I said, I don't understand. How does he know that? How does he know that? See, I didn't know that. See? And I try to evolve myself back down to this kind of love. This stuff happens. That's life. It goes on. And I can handle it by using principles and trying to practice these principles in all my affairs. And I've had a lot of fun being here. This has just been real comfortable. Real, it's just like being with my folks here. Only this many people at my town wouldn't come out to hear me talk. I appreciate y'all being here, and I thank you a lot.